You're listening to Now I've Heard Everything, conversations with the icons of our time.
The nuclear power industry, they're not corrupt per se, but they're scallywags. And they have to be exposed for who they really are.
Anti-nuclear activist Dr. Helen Caldicott. Today on Now I've Heard Everything, I'm Bill Thompson. Do you know where your electricity comes from? You plug something in the wall, you know where that power is coming from? Well, according to the latest figures, about 20% of the nation's electricity is generated by nuclear power. But activists like the Australian-born Dr. Helen Caldicott wish that percentage were zero. For decades, the doctor who founded Physicians for Social Responsibility has been lobbying hard against the use of nuclear power and nuclear weapons as well. And Dr. Caldicott has been a forceful voice for environmental issues generally and women's rights. When I interviewed her in 2006, it was for her book, Nuclear Power is Not the Answer. So here now, from 2006, Dr. Helen Caldicott.
You've been speaking out very eloquently on this subject for a number of years now.
Nothing new, really. I mean, it's the same old, same old. It's the nuclear industry that's put up new arguments to say they're the answer to global warming, and that's a blatant lie. They produce massive quantities of carbon dioxide in the production of nuclear power, which is never talked about. I mean, you'd think, the way they talk, that they stand alone, that the nuclear power plant stands all by itself and didn't have to provide fuel. It's like having a fireplace with no wood in it. You know, it's ridiculous. So to produce the uranium fuel and dig up millions of tons of ore and make the reactor and then decommission the radioactive mausoleum after 40 years by remote control and robots and, you know, store and cool the radioactive waste safely and transport it for 500,000 years, they don't even mention that. So if you take all of that into account, they make about, at the moment, 30% of a similar-sized gas-fired plant. But soon, as the uranium ore declines in concentration and it's very finite, they will be making within a decade or two the same amount of CO2 as a gas-fired plant. So they may as well just use fossil fuel, and then at least you don't get the massive quantities of radioactive waste. That is the legacy we leave to all future generations.
Not to mention the fact if a coal-fired plant does explode, there will not be radioactive clouds that will fall over great areas of population for years to come.
Well, yeah, nuclear power is the only form of electricity generation that can destroy a city, literally. And I talk about that in my book. If Indian Point goes, which is 35 miles north of Manhattan, up to 700,000 people could die, some immediately, some over the long term from cancer, and Manhattan would be uninhabitable forevermore. That's the sort of thing we're talking about. It's like, you know, 40% of Europe is now radioactive from Chernobyl. I do not buy European food because the radiation bioconcentrates in the food chain, and you don't know if a piece of Danish cheese or Turkish dried apricots or French wine or English lamb is containing radioactive material that later will cause you to develop cancer.
I was thinking about it even as I was asking it, that I set up a false dichotomy because you're not advocating a return to coal-fired plants either.
No, we've got to stop burning fossil fuel. I mean, if you see Al Gore's film, the Earth is in the intensive care unit. We've got an acute clinical emergency on our hands, and we have to stop burning fossil fuel like now. All SUVs, all Hummers, all cars that do, you know, 10 miles a gallon or less or 20 miles, they should be thrown off a cliff. And I'm serious. The government, instead of spending $600 billion on killing people in Iraq, should be subsidizing every household to have a solar panel, a solar hot water system, and a Prius car, a hybrid car, which uses 30% the amount of petrol that a normal car uses. And then, like FDR, they should be setting up an energetic New Deal and putting mass transit systems in every single city of the country, by thousands of miles of bicycle tracks, subsidizing people to have bicycles. I mean, this thing is urgent. If we're not careful, the oceans could rise 20 feet in the next 10 years. And if they do that, and you've seen Al Gore's film, much of New York will be flooded, let alone Bangladesh totally disappear because it's built on a delta. So we'll have 100 million ecological refugees, and people do not get it. They're still driving their little girls to ballet classes in their SUVs. They don't understand their little girls will have no future unless they stop driving their SUVs, turn off all their lights, turn off all their computers and VCRs, which suck out 5 to 10% of the electricity currently used. Don't use clothes dryers. Hang your clothes outside in the sun. Oh, what a novel idea. We've been doing it for 3 million years. And then in the winter, hang them up by the furnace in the basement. They dry in a flash.
It occurred to me, though, that many of us have the homeowners associations to deal with. They say, you can't have an unsightly clothesline in your backyard.
Well, I don't know who the hell these people are, but I know that in Atlanta, Georgia, it's illegal to hang your clothes outside because Mrs. Brown might see your underpants or your brassies. I mean, for God's sake, what are we talking about? We in Australia always have and always do hang our clothes outside to dry. It's, you know, you use the nuclear reactor in the sky to dry your clothes. Someone said that the oil companies and nuclear companies would have been into solar power years ago if you could put a blanket around the earth and sell holes in it.
All right, coming back to something you were saying a moment ago, that the proponents, the now resurgent proponents of nuclear power as an alternative, will tell us all the benefits, but they won't tell us all the costs are as well. Is that because they are not fully aware of the costs themselves, or are they concealing those costs from us?
Well, who's they? First, they is the nuclear power industry. They well know the costs. They well know it's a socialized industry. They well know that the government pays for everything and they take the profits, like $1 million a day. You know, they're real, what's the word I'm looking for? They're not corrupt per se, but they're scallywags. They're scallywags. And they have to be exposed for who they really are. I mean, they're really dipping into the government's pocket into the pockets of the taxpayers to make their money. That's absolutely unacceptable. Who else? Well, we've got James Lovelock, who developed the Gaia theory. He thinks nuclear is great. He said he'd put radioactive waste in his basement to heat his house. The guy's out to lunch. He's a medical scientist, and I'm a doctor. He's not a doctor. He also said oxygen causes cancer. So as far as I'm concerned, he's right off the planet. I mean, he's right on global warming and totally wrong. He's been supporting nuclear power for 20 years. Then there's Patrick Moore, who apparently helped found Greenpeace. He is paid for by the nuclear industry. He's a prostitute. So many of these environmentalists, not all, but many, are actually collecting money. You know, they're being used by the nuclear industry. So take no notice of them. The nuclear industry have token representative environmental representatives. It's called greenwashing. I talked at Harvard recently to my alma mater at Children's Hospital, where I worked for 8 years on the faculty, and I had 100 doctors there for grand rounds, and they were absolutely flabbergasted as I walked them through the medical consequences of the nuclear fuel chain, from uranium mining to nuclear waste. I've never seen them so upset. Some of them are my closest friends. So from a medical perspective, there's absolutely no question of what I'm saying is totally and absolutely accurate.
Many earnest people who want to read and find the facts and do the right thing will find equally prominent people with divergent, sometimes diametrically opposed viewpoints on this. It's hard for the average layperson who's not medically trained, who's not scientifically trained, to figure out what the truth is.
Yeah, it's a complex argument. So I invite everyone to read my book, Nuclear Power's Not the Answer, with a skeptical eye, and research everything that I've written. Go to the web, Google it. You can find anything on Google. DOD websites, DOE websites, you know, Federation of American Scientists, Union of Concerned Scientists. Do your research. Argue at dinner parties. Debate. This is healthy. This is democracy. Get angry if you feel like it. Get upset. Cry, you know, because it's terribly serious. But please start practicing critical thinking, and the truth will out. It always does.
After this short break, Dr. Helen Caldicott's explanation for why we even have nuclear power.
Start your day with Now I've Heard Everything.
We post new episodes every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 5 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time.
Subscribe now so you'll have something fresh to listen to and get your day going.
Now back to my 2006 conversation with Dr. Helen Caldicott.
Many of the proponents of nuclear power have that bumper sticker-like slogan, something along the line. They'll say more people have died in their bathtub accidents this morning than have ever died in a nuclear power accident in America. Is that missing the point as well?
Oh, I hate that sort of propaganda. How dare they do that? I mean, look, nuclear power is a carcinogenic industry whose transient byproduct is electricity. For 40 years they generate it. What they leave behind is massive quantities of high-level, toxic, long-lived cauldrons of radioactive waste. No one knows where to put it. No one knows where to store it. Lasts for 500,000 years. You know, geological time frames, tectonic plates moving, ice ages, you name it. That's the legacy we leave to our descendants. Waking up in the morning, the breast milk already radioactive, the babies who are so radiosensitive getting cancer at 5 instead of 60, epidemics of genetic and chromosomal aberrations like Down's, Creutzfeldt-Jakob, phenylketonuria, diabetes, cystic fibrosis, you know, generations hence, so we could turn on our lights. And the reason we've got nuclear power is not because we needed it. It was because the scientists who developed the nuclear weapons, many of whom were my friends and I worked with them, had such a guilt complex about making the bombs, they thought they could handle their guilt by making nuclear power. But in their heart of hearts, they knew how dangerous plutonium is, that it lasts for 500,000 years, that a millionth of a gram is carcinogenic, that no dose low enough injected into dogs didn't give every single dog cancer. They know that it's tremendously carcinogenic. They know 10 pounds is fuel for a nuclear weapon. They're dead now. But I used to have arguments with them, and their legacy from their guilt from making the first bombs is our inheritance of the nuclear power situation.
And we haven't even mentioned the terrorist threat yet.
Well, I mean, terrorists don't need nuclear weapons. They're deployed all over the country. I could melt a nuclear power plant down within hours. 103 of them around the country. Plus, on the roofs of many of the cooling pools. Now, in a reactor is as much long-lived radiation as that released by the explosion of 1,000 Hiroshima-sized bombs. But in the cooling pools is double to 30 times as much. And you could easily melt a cooling pool down by firing a shoulder-held missile at the concrete wall of a cooling pool, let the cooling water drain out, and the cooling pool will melt down. And in my book, I have a study of a meltdown in a cooling pool, much, much more serious than a meltdown at a nuclear reactor, which incidentally nearly occurred a month ago when Sweden, one of their reactors, lost its external electricity supply. For 20 minutes, they couldn't get their diesel generators started. They got to within 2 minutes of a Chernobyl meltdown. Now, the next meltdown means signals the end of nuclear power forever. That's it. So anyone who's investing in it, you know, I mean, it's such a transitory industry and such a gamble with people's lives.
You do say at the end of the book, though, that you're having particular trouble convincing Americans to give up the sense of entitlement that we have. Again, as you mentioned, the SUVs, the constant air conditioning and things like this going on. Truly, honestly, in our lifetime, our solar and wind and energy sources, sources like that, on a national scale, viable alternatives?
Absolutely. We're putting together right now with the man who runs this institute, Arjun Makajani, a roadmap for a totally carbon-free, nuclear-free future. It will be done and completed by April. We'll have a three-page summary, and we'll put it in the hands of every single legislator in the country. It is and will be the prescription for survival. And it will consist of an array of renewable energy sources, all of which are available, very cheap compared to nuclear and even coal. Solar, wind, hydro, geothermal, cogeneration, tidal, wave, and above and beyond all, conservation. Americans could save 28% of the electricity they currently waste, and nuclear power generates only 20%. So, you know, the answers are here right now. Now, what we need is a government with a bit of vision. We need an FDR, a statesman who can inspire people, who they'll love and who they'll follow. And it must be mandatory that people save energy in their houses, that they turn their lights off at night. You know, every single room is lit up. I mean, how dare people think they can do that and not produce global warming and epidemics of malignancy down the future time track? You know, people have to become conscious. I ask people, where is your electricity generated? Nobody knows. Is it a nearby reactor? Is it a coal fire plant? They don't know. They should know. Do they know that when they walk into a self-opening door, that's providing global warming and nuclear waste? Do they know that escalators are doing the same thing? Every single electrical device run by electricity is either causing the death of the planet through global warming or the slow death of the planet through radioactive pollution. Yet, the answers are here. And if we had a massive New Deal campaign for mass transit systems built in every city, imagine the GDP would rise, millions would be employed, solar panels on every single roof, solar hot water systems on every single roof. The Institute of Architects only designing solar buildings facing south, passively heated, passively cooled. I mean, architects, like doctors, have a huge responsibility for the future of society and the world. You know, I think it's time people really started pondering deeply. And also, a sense of emotional comfort is inappropriate today because it's a form of practicing psychic numbing and in so doing, ignoring reality, and that's passive suicide. And we actually hospitalise suicidal patients because they're acutely ill. And society as a whole is a sort of sociopathic society in that, you know, it practices displacement activity, gourmet foods and fashions and God knows what, when the earth is in danger of being destroyed either through global warming, through nuclear war or nuclear power plants. And you know what? We can fix the whole thing. That's the exciting thing. We've got the earth in the intensive care unit with an acute clinical emergency. We now all must become physicians with the dedication that physicians practice to a dying planet. And we can fix it for our children and our grandchildren.
Dr. Helen Caldicott is 85 now. The Smithsonian Institution in Washington named her one of the most influential women of the 20th century. Now you can get a copy of Nuclear Power is Not the Answer by Dr. Helen Caldicott by tapping the link in our show notes or by going to our website, heardeverything.com. We may earn an Amazon commission if you make a purchase. Heardeverything.com is where you can also catch my 1992 interview with someone else who's made a name for himself of fighting for environmental causes, former Vice President Al Gore.
We don't take care with the environment. We assume that we're somehow separate from nature, when actually the message is now beginning to get through that what we do to the Earth's environment, we do to ourselves.
And my 2006 conversation with the winner of the 2004 Nobel Peace Prize for her work for the environment in Africa, Wangari Maathai.
We saw how people in power refused to be the custodians of the resources as they were expected, and instead used their position to enrich themselves with the resources.
And of course, we post new episodes of Now I've Heard Everything right here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and you can find us everywhere you listen to podcasts. And thank you so much for listening. Next time on Now I've Heard Everything, it's Valentine's Day, so we'll revisit my 1993 interview with a very popular man who you've seen on TV for many, many years, who wrote a book, a novel back in 1993 about all kinds of love. In fact, he called it All Kinds of Love. Carl Reiner.
There are two names that I find romantic. Laura. The name Laura's a nice, heroic, heroinic name. And Maria. I love the name Maria.
That's next time on Now I've Heard Everything. I'm Bill Thompson.